This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, find out what's going on with record high prices in Wisconsin's housing market. Now, the state assembly last week passed a bipartisan bill that would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe some forms of birth control directly to patients. The state Senate hasn't taken up the bill. It's not clear that they will in this session. But if it were passed and signed by the governor, it would reduce some barriers for women to access contraceptives and prevent unwanted pregnancies. Similar legislation has gone through the assembly in the past. This is the first time it's come up since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban went into effect. Republican State Representative Karen Hurd of Fall Creek noted the connection between birth control and abortion during a speech on the assembly floor last week.
We can resolve some of this constitutional political tension, some of this heartbreaking dilemma that women find themselves in when they have an unwanted pregnancy or they don't want to become pregnant. Because if we can prevent the conception of a child, then there's no child to abort. There is no decision of whether I need to do this for whatever reasons a person needs to have an thinks that they need to have an abortion over, well, this is the life of a child. Don't put our women through that. Let them have the opportunity to prevent conception in the first place, and they never have to go through this moral predicament that we are currently faced with.
The bill passed the assembly by a wide margin with bipartisan support, 82 to 11 in favor. 11 Republicans voted against it, and anti-abortion groups like Pro-Life Wisconsin and Wisconsin Family Action registered in opposition. Birth control and access to contraceptives are another key layer in the debate over abortion issues in Wisconsin in a time of intense scrutiny of reproductive rights and health care. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you support this bill that would allow pharmacists to prescribe some forms of hormonal birth control? Why or why not? What impacts do you think more access to birth control could have? How do you see this playing into the abortion debate in Wisconsin? Have you or your family been more interested in birth control since that Roe v. Wade decision was overturned? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elisa Von Hagel is a professor of political science at UW-Superior who researches reproductive rights, the pro-life movement, and the religious right. Elisa, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Starting with this bill in the state legislature allowing pharmacists to prescribe some forms of hormonal birth control, how big a deal would that be when it comes to access to contraceptive options, Elisa?
It would significantly increase the options, particularly for women in rural communities. As was mentioned throughout the legislative hearings by many, women in rural communities have very little access to medical practitioners, the time travel to medical facilities, in addition to reduced number of physicians in general, means that having access to physicians and to obtain and then maintain their contraception is very, very difficult. So it would be a significant impact for women across the state, of course, but certainly for those women in rural communities as well.
And this would cover, the birth control pill, the most famous form of birth control, a hormonal patch, not certain other options like implants and things like that. When it comes to the choices women are making these days, how many people would be covered by that? How big an impact would that have?
Well, we have seen in studies that women prefer to have multiple forms of contraception, and there was some concern that only those two methods of contraceptive devices were included. So as you mentioned, the implants, the Nova Ring are not included, which, you know, women prefer a variety of different types of contraceptive devices because, as we know, you know, not every device works perfectly for every woman. And so it certainly doesn't necessarily cover everyone or will help everyone, but it is, I guess, one move in the direction of ensuring greater access for more people.
Turning to the politics of this now, if I said, hey, there's a law related to birth control and it's passing a chamber of the legislature, 82 to 11, tons of bipartisan support to it, that this isn't something that happens every day. Why do you see this being successful, at least the assembly? We'll put a pin in the Senate for now.
Right. Well, I mean, that you're correct that this is quite astonishing to say the least. And I mean, as we've seen post-Dobbs, you know, everything has changed across the United States and in Wisconsin, obviously, specifically. We have across the nation in Wisconsin increased demands for contraception as well as sterilization across the board because of concerns given the Dobbs ruling. They're also in Wisconsin specifically, we saw in the last Supreme Court election race a very wide margin for the liberal justice who won, giving the court a liberal majority, which, and given the, you know, dynamics and elections that have occurred since the Dobbs ruling, it seems as if abortion is maintaining its position as a key election issue. And so Republicans are genuinely concerned how this will play out in upcoming elections, given that, you know, majorities of Americans as well as Wisconsinites do want to have some access to abortion.
Talking to Lisa Von Hagel from UW-Superior, looking at contraception access, abortion access after the Dobbs decision, and a bill in the state legislature passed the assembly, not yet the state senate, that would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe certain forms of birth control. They can't do that right now. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your reactions to that legislation, your thoughts on access to contraception here in the state. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Alisa, we heard a Representative Hurd there, a Republican, making that explicit connection, like, hey, we're arguing about abortion. It's a divisive issue. Maybe, she says, by providing more access to contraception, we can prevent the need for it, at least for some people. What do you think about that explicit connection from that lawmaker?
I mean, I think it's an argument that Democrats have been making in the state, for a while now, that, as you mentioned, this legislation has come up in the past, and it certainly had not maintain the bipartisan support that it gained this time around. And so I agree that it is, that there definitely is that connection. However, I think now it is more of a, it is correct in her statement, but given the large upswell in support from Republican representatives, there does seem to be some political maneuvering in terms of reading the signs of what is going on, with the abortion issue in Wisconsin.
And as I mentioned, some groups opposed to abortion who often support Republicans or back Republican-led initiatives, they opposed this legislation that would allow pharmacists to prescribe some contraceptives. Can you talk about the politics within the anti-abortion world and those groups that might say, yeah, we also don't want to advance contraceptive access?
Right. So many of the groups that are opposed to this are, as you mentioned, are opposed to abortion in general and maintain or argue that hormonal contraceptions are abortifacients. The medical community overwhelmingly has determined that that is not the case, that it prevents implantation. However, many of these groups maintain that it can or does potentially, essentially cause an abortion, which, again, the medical community does not support as fact. And there are other arguments that are made concerning women's health and safety by removing, or not necessarily removing, but by allowing women to go around visiting their physicians and just going to a pharmacist. And there are, many other arguments regarding other avenues to prevent unplanned pregnancies, mostly involving abstinence, marriage, that sort of thing. So I think the typical arguments that are made in opposition to abortion are at stake here.
One other aspect of this legislation is it would accord with what's called the conscience clause in the state that says a pharmacist who has religious objections doesn't have to fill a prescription for birth control. That would be also true for prescribing birth control if that became legal for pharmacists. Can you talk about what's become known as the conscience clause when it comes to birth control and pharmacists?
Correct. So absolutely. So physicians as well as pharmacists have this laws basically protecting their moral religious beliefs in opposition to the to either abortion or birth control contraceptive devices, and thus they are allowed to take a step back and not be directly involved in providing, again, either an abortion or contraceptive devices to the person with a prescription. And so this would still maintain that protection. This was brought up in the hearings from some of those opposed to this bill, that there is that there are not protections, sufficient protections for pharmacists in this respect. However, we do know that that is not the case, that pharmacists will be protected if they do not agree with or believe religiously that contraceptive devices are moral or religiously acceptable.
We're talking to UW Superior political science professor Alisa von Hagel about access to contraceptives and their role in reproductive health and the broader abortion debate as well. The thing that prompted this discussion, a bill passed the state assembly, may or may not hit the state senate. This bill would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe a couple of different forms of birth control here in the state. They can't do that currently. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more access to birth control here in Wisconsin? If pharmacists could prescribe birth control, is that something that would be useful for you, or would it have been useful for you at some point in your life? What do you think of this idea? If you're a pharmacist yourself, love to hear your perspective on it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Alisa von Hagel, political science professor at UW Superior and reproductive rights expert, with us today for a look at a state assembly bill. It passed. It would allow pharmacists to prescribe some forms of birth control directly to patients. Still waiting to see if the state Senate will pick that one up. And we're looking at wider issues of access to contraceptives and how it connects to reproductive health and abortion issues now that Roe v. Wade was overturned almost exactly a year ago. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How does your stance on abortion interact with your stance on contraception? Do you have concerns about expanded access to birth control, allowing pharmacists to prescribe some of those hormonal birth controls? Do you see it as a good idea? Join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Alisa, turning to wider issues now related to abortion rights here in Wisconsin, we've got a change coming in the state Supreme Court after that election you mentioned earlier. Justice-elect Protasiewicz will become Justice Protasiewicz in August, giving the liberals a 4-3 majority on the court. Do you expect to see related cases start percolating and maybe hit the court after that change happens?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we know that there is a lawsuit currently making its way through the court, brought by the Attorney General of Wisconsin, Josh Call, directly challenging the 1849 abortion ban. And, you know, no doubt there will be other issues that will be at play or will be introduced through litigation to hopefully make its way to the court now that it has for the first time in however many decades, that liberal majority.
And I don't want to try to predict the future, but how sweeping could changes be? I mean, do you think it's possible that the Supreme Court could, in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Supreme Court could ultimately strike down or limit that 1840s abortion law here in Wisconsin?
I mean, prognostications are always difficult on these types of issues, but I mean, it very well could be the case that that 1849 ban is struck down and Wisconsin returns to the pre-Dobbs environment. There could be, as you mentioned, sort of limitations or sort of changes to that ban that would allow for greater access, but would not necessarily return Wisconsin to pre-Dobbs. And so there's, you know, I mean, there's a million different things that could happen between now and then with respect to any type of rulings that are made. But mean, if we are, you know, looking forward, that does seem to be an environment that would be conducive to bringing back some access to and some greater clarity to physicians, specifically in the state of Wisconsin, regarding when abortions can be provided and what, you know, protections they have as physicians from providing abortions when they are asked for by patients or they are needed for the woman's basic health and safety.
Let's bring in a caller now. Laura is with us in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So here's my question. The guest mentioned some sort of protection for a pharmacist that would object to, you know, on religious grounds to prescribing birth control. First off, I'll say I do want to see, yes, I would like to see pharmacists be able to prescribe the birth control. But I'm thinking in my town here where the pharmacist, you know, is Christian and could potentially object, we have employment law that protects the employer from asking what that pharmacist's religion is and protects them from refusing to hire them based on the religion. But what is the pharmacy to do? Hire a second pharmacist who will prescribe the birth control? I mean, that really puts the employer in a sticky wicket. Is there anything built into the law that would allow the employer greater leverage in who they decide to hire?
Gotcha. Laura, thanks for the call. And Lisa, these debates have been around for a while with the conscience clause as it relates to a pharmacist filling that birth control prescription. And maybe it's a town with one pharmacy and it could support one pharmacist per shift. How have we seen that issue play out, Lisa?
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, especially in these rural communities, these are issues that are currently, you know, being dealt with. And so, and as the caller mentioned, employers are not allowed to ask for individuals' religious beliefs. However, if a person does have a conscientious objection, that there are forms that are filled out, given to their employer. So the employer is aware of this at the start, and thus, given, you know, this sort of situation arising, hopefully one would hope that there would be some mechanism in place, whether it is, again, sending prescriptions to the closest the other closest pharmacy or ensuring some ability for the person to gain this prescription would be provided. And so, again, I believe it's sort of a ad hoc situation at this point, as there has been no movement to clarify basically the expectations or the requirements for physicians or pharmacies to provide this in general. So it's still sort of an ad hoc basis that will certainly most likely be at an issue if this legislation were to pass.
Laura, thanks for the call. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, I'm curious if a woman was married and she had a husband, and the husband, the man, objected to her getting contraception, would he have any right to block that from occurring, or is it purely a woman's individual right?
Jeff, thanks for the call. My understanding, Elisa, is the answer would be no. The man wouldn't, unless they have something wrong.
No, correct. Absolutely. It is. There are no requirements or expectations that a married woman would have her husband's consent to obtain this.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Elisa, let's look toward the future now. Now, this bill regarding pharmacists may or may not pass, may or may not get taken up at all by the state Senate. What other avenues related to laws related to contraception and abortion do you have your eye on right now?
There is a bill that has been introduced that would clarify the or that would provide the provide for abortion in cases of rape and incest that has been introduced by the Republicans. Evers, I believe, has stated that he would not sign it into law, as he will only sign into law something that would expand or provide access for all Wisconsinites access to abortion. And thus, you know, whether how far a bill such as that would go forward, it's hard to see, but that is one particular bill that will most likely we'll be hearing about in the upcoming months as well. And I think more so looking forward to seeing how the courts start to weigh in on the case before them, I think will be the most most important to determine reproductive rights in the state of Wisconsin in the coming years.
And in the coming year and a half, we've got this election campaign, president, Congress, all points down below that as well. How big an issue do you think abortion and contraception will be in this next, almost 18 months?
Well, I mean, what we've seen in the past since the Dobbs ruling, it's played an outsized role, surprisingly outsized role. The question always remains is whether or not that momentum can continue on to the, you know, the 18 months down the road. It's hard to say, especially in states where abortion is no longer accessible to women. It would suggest that it will still be a very important issue coming up in the months closer to the election. So I believe that it will still be a central issue and something that Republicans have expressed concern for and are attempting to prevent an outsized impact of abortion impacting elections in the upcoming election cycle.
Alisa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me today.
That's Alisa von Hagel, professor of political science at UW-Superior, who researches reproductive rights, the pro-life movement, and the religious right. She joined us today for a look at a proposal that would allow Wisconsin pharmacists to prescribe some forms of birth control and what that can mean for reproductive health in the state. That bill has passed the Assembly by a pretty wide margin. Still not clear if the state Senate plans to take it up during this session. If you want to hear more about that issue, check out the archives at WPR.org. The morning show heard from the state's pharmacy association, got their perspective on how this bill might actually work. Again, check that out and our extensive archives online at WPR.org or download the Wisconsin Public Radio app. Coming up tomorrow, on the morning show, a top state election official is getting close to the end of her term in office and some leading Republicans don't seem to want her back. Should she stay or should she go? Join that conversation coming up tomorrow morning at 8. That's here on the Ideas Network. Fact one, a lot of dogs like to retrieve frisbees and other off-brand flying discs. Fact two, disc golf or frisbee golf is getting more popular lately. One dog put those two things together to rescue over 150 discs from a local forest. And now they're going up for sale, the discs, not the dog. As reported in the Washington Post, Daisy, the yellow lab, and her human live in West Virginia. Their daily walks often go through the woods on the edge of a disc golf course. 4 years ago on a walk, Daisy dashed into the woods on her extended leash, came back with a lost disc from the course. Since then, Daisy's gotten into the game, rounding up 155 discs at last count. They started to build up. Now they're up for grabs. If they got a name on them, owners can reclaim them with a suggested donation for animal rescue. The rest will be sold to raise money for the park that contains the disc golf course. My question, I've never played the game, but over 12 dozen discs lost in the woods? That's gross incompetence, people. Dog and sports news you can use. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an urban planning professor explains the state of Wisconsin's housing market. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about pushing the boundaries of coffee in Milwaukee.
The culture of coffee can be seen everywhere, from the aisles of your local grocery store to the wide variety of options on the menus at big box chains and small local shops. Wisconsinite Ryan Castellaz is on a quest to raise the bar even further for the drink he's so passionate about. He's the founder of Discourse Coffee in Milwaukee and the author of the new book, The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. He says it all started when he was studying abroad to become an opera singer.
And when I was in Italy training, I fell really, really in love with espresso culture, like this ritual of going to the bar every morning, putting my euro coin down on the bar, getting my shot of espresso, taking it down. It became something I fell deeply in love with. And when I moved back to the States, I needed to recreate that culture in my life.
His mom bought him a home espresso machine for his dorm room. and he fell in love with sharing his passion with others.
It wasn't until several years later that I kind of came to this confluence of the storytelling that I loved in music and the craft of making coffee and how those two things kind of came together.
That's when he opened the original Discourse Coffee in Sister Bay. He says that the economy of coffee is about volume and productivity, but he wanted to try something different, work on a smaller scale.
And so I think this smaller niche model that is less focused on the profitability and more focused on barista expression is something that is new and exciting, but something that's a little bit more foreign to the traditional model of running a coffee shop.
He describes the evolution of coffee culture as having three waves. First, Folgers and Maxwell House, convenience. The second is shops like Starbucks.
They kind of split the balance between convenience and quality. It's definitely a step up. You have these creative solutions, but it's still very much a productivity-driven model.
He says the third wave is about transparency, choosing the right bean, the right roast, and letting it shine on its own.
It involves the barista getting out of the way. It involves the barista diving in that coffee to perfection, but not to their own expression, to the expression of the farmer, to the expression of the roaster, to be an expert translator in the intention of the coffee.
Now, with his shop in Milwaukee and his new book, Castellaz wants to power a fourth wave.
With the fourth wave, we give the barista a voice. We say the point of this is barista expression. We've gotten really good at making good coffee. And so in the fourth wave, instead of making great transparent coffee the goal, great transparent coffee is the baseline. And if you think about this like a cocktail bar, right? Like a bartender, what they do, they take amazing spirits from all around the world and then they translate them into their own voice through their cocktails. And so what the fourth wave is it's saying, hey, baristas should have some of that fun too. It's bringing that mentality into the coffee space of saying, hey, we're going to take these amazing transparent coffees from around the world. We're going to serve them to you in a beautiful format, but we're also going to play with them and we're going to express ourselves through them. And that focus on novel engagements with the customer, with the guest, that is the fourth wave.
And in his book, he explores four different moods for coffee concoctions and cocktails.
The moods in the book that we've chosen are comforting, rejuvenating, adventurous, and celebratory.
He thinks we're all emotional drinkers, and he believes coffee has the flexibility to meet us where we're at.
And so in the book, we wanted to make it very, very easy for the reader to take a look at the book and say, hey, what do I feel like right now? Do I feel adventurous? Do I want something that's going to comfort me? And then immediately guide the viewer, the reader, right to that section. We wanted to make this as easy to use, actually use, as possible.
And now he wants to continue to evolve, to deepen the connections that are possible through coffee.
To have a longer format of time with people, to be able to do a tasting menu with somebody where we can really talk to them about all of the thought that goes into these drinks. That, I think, is the next step for us. It's being able to bring people even more deeply into the story of who we are and what we do.
For more on Ryan Castellaz, his coffee shop, and book, visit wisconsinlife.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
Now, Wisconsin residents are paying record amounts for homes this year. According to last month's numbers from the Wisconsin Realtors Association, the state's median house price is nearly $295,000. At the same time, home sales are down by more than 20%. Interest rate hikes from the Federal Reserve are raising mortgage costs, and the construction sector nationally is lagging behind demand. I want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you bought or sold a home lately or decided not to? Share your experience. How do you feel about the state of the housing market? Realtors, what are you seeing in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kurt Paulson is a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison's Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture. Kurt, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I talked to you just over a year ago. At that point, you described Wisconsin's housing affordability as a five-alarm fire. Are things looking any better or worse now compared to then?
Well, yeah, I remember that, and I'm wondering if we can coin a term of seven or eight alarm fire. Because when I talked to you last year, mortgage interest rates were about 5.7%. Now they're up to 6.7%. right? And as you pointed out, house prices in Wisconsin have jumped $25,000 to $40,000 in some markets since last year. So in many ways, things have gotten worse. It is still a seller's market. We hear stories of all cash offers well above listing price. You know, the peak home buying months are April, May, and June. And as you pointed out, sales are way down and prices are way up. So for people looking to buy a home, it's tough out there.
What is driving the costs of the houses up right now?
So there's a couple of factors that all come together, right? So that we have seen that even though interest rates have gone up, there's still tremendous demand for housing, oftentimes by people who are older and have enough income to pay in cash. And so demand for housing has not really declined, even though interest rates have gone up. But one of the largest drivers is just a lack of inventory. So there's the short term and there's the long term. In the long term, we just have not built enough housing over the last 15 years to keep up with demand. And in the short run, in the last 2 years, the cost of construction has gone up about 35%. So when it costs a lot more money to build a new house, then the price of existing housing goes up. And I would say that the other challenge is that when interest rates were really low during the COVID pandemic, people like me refinanced our mortgages well below 3%. So many of us are stuck. There's no way that we could afford to move or sell and then have to take an interest rate closer to 7% when our current rate is below 3%. So it's really multiple factors that lead to just incredible demand, a lack of supply, and not a lot of movement in housing.
You mentioned those cash buyers. Often people established economically, they can come and buy a house, not worry about those mortgage interest rates. Now, does this end up hurting maybe that first-time home buyer who hasn't built up that equity in an older house or however they're paying for it and is at the mercy of our current mortgage rates? Are they the hardest hit here?
Absolutely. And so particularly, anyone who's trying to use a like an FHA or a VA loan is going to lose out to an all-cash buyer. And all-cash buyers can afford to have no contingencies on financing, and they usually can pay over asking. So, yeah, we are seeing this particularly in Wisconsin and nationwide, that it's millennials who are competing against baby boomers for the same housing, and the baby boomers are winning. And that assumes that the millennials have been able to save enough for a down payment, which is oftentimes not the case. So it's really impacting first-time home buyers much harder than kind of move-up or second-time home buyers.
Let's talk about the construction side of things. I was looking at a longer-term chart of construction, new house construction. No surprise, after the Great Recession hit 2008, 2009, that plummeted. That went way down. Are we still feeling the gap left by that post-recession reluctance to build houses that weren't going to be worth as much as they had been 2 years before?
Absolutely. So, you know, before the Great Recession, we used to build about 35,000 housing units per year in the state of Wisconsin. But in the last 3 years, we've only built about 21,000 a year. So even on a per capita basis, we are way down in terms of what we have been able to produce over the last 15 years. In fact, last year, 2022, building permits in Wisconsin were down, even though our demand is up. That's largely driven by some of the difficulties for developers of ownership or rental housing to secure financing. So the other factor I think we should mention is that banks have significantly tightened lending to developers for building new housing, largely driven by some of the scares that we had a few months ago from the Silicon Valley Bank crisis.
Kurt Paulson is with us, professor of urban planning at UW-Madison's Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture, looking at the housing market in Wisconsin with high prices, mortgage rates going up, low turnover. It's a perfect storm in all the bad ways. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you been looking to buy a home? Success or still looking? What are the obstacles you're facing? If so, have you sold a house lately, or have you looked around in the market and decided, hey, I guess I'm better off staying with this lower mortgage rate for a while now? Join in with your experiences or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Kurt Paulson, urban planning professor at UW-Madison, looking at the state of Wisconsin's housing market. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do things look like in your neck of the woods? Whether you're looking or you know people who are, is it easy to find and buy a home? Difficult? How's rent looking if you're in the rental market? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Dave is with us in Chippewa Falls. Dave, hi.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me on. So I'm a home inspector here in Chippewa Falls, and I'm seeing a lot of first-time home buyers that are making offers, and they're afraid to put a home inspection contingency because they're afraid they won't get the house. And the only thing that is in their price range are usually really old houses if they're small, especially. And we haven't built small houses for a really long time unless it's a condo. And condos are overpriced for a lot of these first-time home buyers. And so I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Dave, thanks for the call. A lot of news from the field there, Kurt. What do you think?
Yeah, Dave is exactly right. As I talked about before, when you're facing an all-cash buyer, and you're trying to compete for that more affordable housing product, it's usually an older housing unit. And if you put an inspection contingency on your offer, which, you know, I think anyone in the business would tell you, you should get a house inspected by someone like Dave, who can help you figure out if the furnace is going to go bad or if the roof is going to leak. And that's what we used to do all the time, is put an inspection contingency on a home purchase offer. You know, sellers are going to choose the offer that has no contingencies. And so, as Dave pointed out, people are buying older homes without an inspection, and then they're hit with all sorts of surprises and expensive repair bills. And there's really not a lot we can do about that right now until the housing market cools off again, right? We think that the balance between sellers and buyers is usually about equal when there's about 6 months of supply on the market. And right now we have less than 3 months of supply. So, you know, a lot of caution for buyers purchasing older homes. I don't know if there's much we can do about it.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Judy now in Madison. Judy, hello.
Hi. A friend of mine from Tennessee was saying that a private equity company has bought up about a quarter of all the houses in a suburb of Nashville. And I wondered if private equity companies are busy in Wisconsin as well, buying up houses for whatever.
Judy, thanks for the call. I've talked to a reporter in years past, Kurt, about at least some of that going on in Wisconsin, in the Milwaukee area, I believe. How common is that, though, for private equity firms to be buying up housing here in the state?
Well, and so just to put this in context, when a private equity firm is buying up housing, they're usually buying in bulk, and then they're intending those to be rentals, not for ownership. And our friends in Milwaukee have noticed an uptick of private equity companies buying houses in bulk in Milwaukee, but it's still a reasonably small component of the market, even in Milwaukee. I think it's at most 2 or 3%. But this is a big issue and a concern, particularly in a lot of our more southern and East Coast states, where, you know, first-time home buyers, lower to moderate-income home buyers, are priced out because they can't compete with all-cash offers, whether it's from a baby boomer or from a private equity company. So it really, in tight markets, it can drive up prices a little bit, and also just limit opportunities for your first-time home buyers.
And Judy, thanks for the call. You can look at our archives for discussion with author Aaron Glantz, author of the book Homewreckers, who looked into this issue. This is a couple years back. Dave joins us now in Toma. Dave, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm on a quest to end urban sprawl, and I want nobody thinks of this condensed housing and shopping they're putting in the notion if that could be possibly a good trend for the future.
Dave, thanks for the call. I think a lot of downtowns are seeing this kind of thing, Kurt. Commercial downstairs, residential for two, three, four floors up above that. Is this a wave of the future? Is it going to help meet our housing needs?
Yeah, absolutely. So to Dave's comments, you know, for 70 years, we built our cities where we would segregate the office and employment land uses from the residential land uses, which forces everybody to drive and creates the sprawl that Dave was talking about. But one of the big trends in housing now is converting these vacant office or retail parcels, because we have a declining demand for office and retail because of e-commerce and work from home. And an opportunity to convert some of those older campuses to a mixture of housing and jobs and retail. In fact, the state legislature recently passed a bill in a series of bills to expand housing supply. And one of those would help to create a $100 million fund to convert commercial land uses that are vacant to housing opportunities. So for many of our cities, whether a suburb or a smaller town, converting some of the vacant retail and commercial space to housing helps to attract customers, helps to replenish your tax base, and helps to provide a variety of housing opportunities in a kind of smaller scale, walkable, Main Street sort of format.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. Now, Kurt, earlier you used the phrase, when the housing market cools down. What would it take for the housing market to cool down?
Well, that's the problem, is I don't think it's going to cool down. Because if construction costs are one of these long-term drivers of housing prices, until we can get construction costs back to what used to be close to normal, housing is going to continue to be expensive. And it's like we're stepping on the gas and the brakes at the same time, because we have this huge demographic surge of millennials who want to buy homes, and there's nothing for them to buy. So I don't see the housing market cooling off anytime in the next 2 or 3 years. I see that the Fed will likely raise interest rates probably once or twice more this year. And that has done nothing to decrease housing prices. The rate of growth has slowed a little bit. But unfortunately, housing prices tend to ratchet up quickly, and they're very slow to go back down.
Assuming, Kurt, we see it as a positive goal to make housing more affordable. I think a lot of people would agree with that as a good goal.
Yes.
Are there measures you could see a federal government, a state government, even a local government taking to help accomplish that?
Right. And so, I think it would be worth pointing out that last week the state legislature passed and the governor signed in a bipartisan fashion about 5 bills, all designed to address the shortage of housing and workforce housing in Wisconsin. And the Joint Finance Committee's budget includes about $500 million for these. And so that's a great down payment from the state to address these issues. I know that there's a lot of legislation at the federal level, but there's also the federal budget challenges. At a local level, it involves communities really inventorying their zoning and other policies to make sure that, that kind of smaller scale entry-level housing product can be built in your community, and working with developers to both expedite the process, but also to provide financial assistance to build more housing that's accessible and attainable for moderate income families. But it's a real challenge because, you've got to bridge that gap between how much it costs to build a unit of housing and what people can afford.
In just our last minute or so, Kurt, I know there's not a magic answer, but for that millennial perspective, first-time home buyer we've been talking about in this tough situation, any thoughts, advice, or reassurance you might give them?
Boy, I'd hate to give kind of false reassurance, but the best you can do is to Make sure your credit is clean, that you've gone through home buyer education counseling, that you're working with a real estate realtor, and that you know how much you can afford. And I guess the other advice to millennials is to warn your parents that if they don't fix the housing market, you might be moving back in with them. And maybe that will scare people into action.
Kurt, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That's Kurt Paulson, professor of urban planning at UW-Madison's Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture. He joined us with a look at the latest on the housing market here in Wisconsin. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Wisconsin Republicans laid out their plans for income tax cuts last week. Find out how that compares to Governor Evers' plans and the impact it could all have on Wisconsin. And can we agree on the meaning of patriotism in a time of partisan divide? A Wisconsin ethics expert starts our conversation on patriotism. That's 1 week before the 4th of July, and you can join in with your thoughts. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll get some tips on how to make the most of a trip down the Wisconsin River, and you could share your river paddling memories over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.